and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey,
from Splitsville Luxury Lanes at Patriot Place, right outside of Gillette Stadium. It is Gasper and Martin here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We are here on location for the ceremony that's going to take place later this afternoon as former left tackle Matt Light is going to be inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Matt Light also slated to join the show as well at some point over the next 3 hours. Good morning, Chris. Hi, how are you? Beautiful fall day. Good to see you, pal.
Yeah, this is great fall weather. Fantastic day for the induction of Matt Light into the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Odd to do a show with a disco ball staring right at us, but you're used to this.
This is my second home, man. I'm used to this place. Good to be at Splitsville.
Typically down here for the Patriots pregame show. I do the postgame show and staring at a bar as well on a Saturday with college football on the TV screens. I got to admit, I'm starting to get the shakes because it's a Pavlovian response, you see. I see the football. I see the bar. I see Coors Light on tap. Daddy needs a drink. But I am a broadcast professional, Chris, as are you. So we have a lot to get to here. We're going to talk Celtics as we have the first Sports Hub Celtics show of the season starting at noon.
Absolutely. I think Marcus Morris just took another shot in that preseason game.
Chris, I want to get your thoughts on the Red Sox and the state of this rotation heading into the playoffs. We're now less than a week away from game one of the ALDS. But we will begin today with the unfamiliar territory that the New England Patriots find themselves in at the quarter pole of the NFL season, and that is a must-win scenario against an unbeaten Miami Dolphins team here at Gillette Stadium tomorrow afternoon. And I say must-win, Chris, because of the simple math of the AFC East, really. If they're to lose this game, they'd be behind Miami by three full games, facing a short week against an Indianapolis Colts team that looks like they have an improved defense. They've looked like a tough out the last couple of weeks. They played the Eagles pretty tough last week. Week before, they kind of stunned the Washington Redskins. And then that's going to be followed by another primetime game against the Kansas City Chiefs team that looks like an absolute offensive juggernaut. So this is a real tough spot. And look, if any team is going to bounce back, it's the Patriots time and time again. They've done that over the last near two decades. But I guess the reason I feel so shook is because, I'm not in full Big Jim Murray mode. Scale of 1 to 10, I'm in an 8, a hard 8.
Okay.
But I feel that way just because of how ugly it looked on Sunday. Both on and off the field, and from a pure football standpoint, especially defensively, like, there was just no fight there. They're getting pushed around in that front seven. They're giving up nearly 5 yards a carry. The linebackers are still awful in coverage. It just looks like there's not a quick fix defensively, and I think this Miami team, while 3-0, might be a little bit bit of a mirage because
it's a little bit
played.
Of a soft 3-0.
But, and we're going to get to this statistic that has me, like, a little bit worried heading into tomorrow's game in a little bit. But, you know, they do have a pretty good passing attack, specifically in one area. And I just don't know if they're going to be able to stop them. Like, yeah, I ultimately, gun to my head, think the Pats do win this game tomorrow. But in terms of the defense, I just don't see how that gets fixed right now.
Well, I mean, tough week, obviously, for the Patriots. You know, you lose Juwan Bentley, who was really your fastest linebacker. He was rated very highly by Pro Football Focus and their position ranking. So hard to lose him at a position where you already feel like it's a weakness. And I think the Patriots have gotten exposed at that linebacker spot the last couple of weeks. But really, it's been the whole front seven, too, not just the linebackers. I think if they can get Trey Flowers back, I've said this before and I'll say it again. The last 2 weeks, take those game tapes, save them, present them, dump them on Bill Belichick's desk if you're Trey Flowers' agent. He is the most impactful player on the defense, and they have looked lost without him the last couple of weeks. I think he is a guy that could help them quite a bit, and I think they're going to have to find some ways to be better against the run. I'm not that worried about that because I think ultimately – traditionally, you look at the Patriots and Bill Belichick, they find a way to be sound against the run. I think a lot of that is fundamentals. Maybe it's a little bit, I don't want to say more effort, but better execution, getting off some blocks, staying in your gaps, all that stuff. I don't worry about that. What I worry about with Miami is just them getting out leverage in the speed thing. Because when you look at Miami's team, and you're talking about Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant and Kenny Stills and Kenyon Drake, they have a lot of speed. And I think they can do some of the things to the Patriots that the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs have done to the Patriots. And that's what worries me. you know, you can play everything right, but if you can't, it sort of reverts to the playground at some points. If you can't catch the guy to bring him down, you're in trouble.
Well, that tight end that they drafted out of Penn State looks pretty good, too.
Mike Gesicki.
Gesicki. So, yeah. You know, they have some weapons. And then, all right, so that's the defense. And then the second corner thing, too, has looked like a mess, whether it's Eric Rowe or Jason McCourty. You know, hats off to Stephon Gilmore. He looks like the best player on the defense the last couple of weeks, or really, you know, the first 3 weeks of the season. But the second corner's a mess. And then the offense. Tom Brady, obviously and rightfully frustrated, I think, with what he has to work with.
Yeah.
They can't get Sony Michel going, a player like you I was high on in the draft, and he looks a little too much east-west, not enough north-south, but then again, he's not getting a lot of good blocking, especially on the right side of the line last week. Gronk's essentially been shut out for the last couple of games. It's been ugly. I don't know what the fix is there. I mean, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for Julian Edelman. I'm sure it'll look different when he's back, but I don't know. What have you made of trying to give it to Sony Michel time and time again here, especially early in the last couple of weeks? It just feels like
it does feel a little forced. You know, I'm still high on Sony Michel. You got to remember, this is basically like his preseason. He looks a little bit tentative in terms of making cuts and making decisions. Like, I think he's still adjusting to what NFL speed is versus, you know, SEC speed. And, you know, the SEC is, as Patrick Pass once said to me, the closest thing to the league, but it's still not the league.
Yeah.
And so there's an adjustment there. I'm not going to give up on that guy at this point. I think they're going to need to be able to run the football, not just now, but later in the season. So you have to keep sort of pressing that. But I do think at times it's been forced. Also, look, it's sort of hard to run the ball a little bit when you're behind. I mean, you tend to get away from it because you're playing from behind, and that's what they've done the last 2 weeks is play from behind. They need to be better on third down. They've been dreadful so far this season offensively on third down. I think they're 29th in the NFL. They have to find a way to convert those. They're 29th in yards after catch, so that speaks, I think, somewhat to the wide receivers not being able to make plays after they catch the ball. Jacob Hollister, let's see if he's healthy. I'm not saying he's the cure, he's the panacea, but I'd like to see more of him, because I think if you have him out there with Gronk instead of Dwayne Allen, you can create some matchup situations for the other team. You can maybe go hurry up and change formation without changing personnel, sort of like they did in the days of Aaron Hernandez. Because at this point, I think a lot of this is Josh McDaniels, like, scheming this up, especially with this wide receiving core without Edelman.
Well, that was one of your five fixes that you wrote about in the Boston Globe yesterday for this team. Use two tight ends. And look, Hollister looks good. It's just, unfortunately, it feels like he might be Rex Burkhead-y in that it just feels like he's consistently getting dinged up and can't stay on the field.
No, it's a problem.
The other thing, so, and then there's the intangibles that have me shook about this team. You know, it's the behind-the-scenes stuff. Just sticking to on the field to go, like, this is one of the things that has me real concerned is for two straight weeks now, Chris, you've had mind-numbingly stupid plays you really wouldn't ever see from a Bill Belichick coach team. Against the Jaguars, they don't snap the ball or touch the lineman who's offsides when they're in the neutral zone on that fourth and short on the punt. And then last week, 12 men on the field, and it wasn't a mistake of 12 men on the field or a guy, like, still with a foot on the
field.
No,
there was 12 guys lined up.
That was 12 men on the field.
Yeah.
Hey, we can't stop this team. Let's try to add a player, and they probably still wouldn't have been able to do it. It's that kind of stuff. It's at the risk of sounding overdramatic, but this is what we do here. At least that's what I do in sports radio. It just feels like over the last couple of weeks, like, they tuned him out or the message isn't getting through. And that, again, you don't typically see from a Bill Belichick coach.
Well, you know, you're saying that you're exaggerating, but I thought it was really interesting. Mike Reese, who is one of the most level-headed reporters you'll find, sort of made this point after the loss to Detroit that they had talked so much about, you know, more attention to detail and a faster start, and then it didn't happen. And he's someone who brought up the point, you know, is there an issue with the message being conveyed and not being followed? You know, is the message getting through? So I think that's, you know, that's fair to ask at this point. We'll see where it is. It's still early in the season, right? I mean, I don't like what I've seen. And I'll be the first one to say that if they had won these games, you know, no one would be talking about the, you know, extension of the preseason thing. It would be like, oh, away they go. And, you know, all that offseason, it was all made up by the media. So now that they've lost them, you know, some people revert into the shell of, well, you know, it's just, you know, extension of the preseason because they didn't win the games. So I freely acknowledge that. But I don't think you can fully judge this team until Edelman's back and we see what the deal is. And I don't think that they're at the tune-out point yet. I don't think this is like 2009 yet.
And then you have Gronk after last week's game openly admitting, yeah, they tried to trade
which
me.
Which was awesome.
Oh, well, awesome, and I also found it stunning because now it's, I mean, you know, the divisions have been set here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's Tom.
Team Tom, yeah, and Team Bill.
Team Tom, Team Bill, and it just feels like that thing, if this continues to get ugly, the uglier that's going to get. And while that's good in terms of content for us in sports radio, it would, I think, definitely signify like this thing is falling apart.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, if they get back to winning, then they're not going to be talking about this. People won't be upset. They won't be agitated, annoyed, disgruntled.
Well, it's the one line you always use. Winning is the best deodorant.
Winning is the ultimate deodorant. It is. I mean, you know, there are things that stink to high heaven, but if you're winning, you know, you don't smell. It's like Axe deodorant. It just drowns out everything else around it from an olfactory standpoint.
That stuff is horrible.
I know. Oh, my God. I think some of my hangovers in my mid-20s were not from drinking.
Right, you could
but
taste
from,
it.
From the taste and smell from wearing Axe deodorant for, like, 10 hours. I think that literally made me sick.
What do you mean? Ladies love the Axe. You spray it on all over. No. No, just don't use it. You're trying to cover up your natural musk, sir. Okay, so we're off and running here, talking about the Patriots. And as I mentioned, one of the things I wanted to talk about when we come back here there's a jarring stat about this Miami Dolphins offense that you have to hear, especially if you're concerned about the Patriots defense like I am. So we'll get to that next here on Gasper and Murray, live from Splitsville here at Patriot Place. It's 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tannehill holding on, now going deep, has a man in the end zone, caught! Kenny Stills, touchdown!
Like any good passing team, whoever's open. Yeah, they do a good job of putting pressure on you, getting to the open guy. They're all dangerous. Backs, tight ends, receivers. Coach Gase does a good job of the scheme. Quarterback does a good job of reading it. So, got to defend all of them. Just can't stop one guy.
So that was Ryan Tannehill to Kenny Stills in the Dolphins' third win of the season against the Oakland Raiders last week, followed by Bill Belichick talking about the Dolphins' passing game. And I saw a stat that I found jarring about this Miami team that, look, unless you watched last week's game, that was on opposite the Chiefs and 49ers. So I was going back and forth trying to watch them. It's like, okay, I don't believe that much in the Raiders, so I don't know how much I could really take from that. But I was surprised how well the Miami offense was rolling there at times and watching that game. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know, like, you know, everything about the Miami Dolphins like a Dolphins fan. But I found this stat that has me a little bit shook, especially with how the Patriots defense has looked here over the last couple of weeks, Chris. And that is the Dolphins lead the NFL in touchdown receptions from the slot with 5. And,
wow.
they've completed 24 of 29 passes for 303 yards when targeting slot receivers. As of today, who's really the slot? Who's the slot guy in coverage? Is it Jonathan Jones?
Yeah, it's Jonathan Jones.
And he's been okay. But if they're moving Stills in motion, they're using him as the slot at times. Like, he's a damn good receiver. That, to me, is a concern going into tomorrow's game. And it's really tomorrow's really going to be about the field position, too, because another thing I found out about this team that has me concerned, again, with the way that the Patriots defense has looked, Miami has started 9 drives in opponent's territory. It's the second highest total in the league behind Cleveland, of all teams, but they've obviously been improved. But the thing is what I'm getting at is this Miami offense is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of weapons, and to just piggyback off of what you said, I mean, they lead the NFL in average starting position for drives. It's basically the 33.5-yard line, so that helps. It shortens the field. And they have a lot of speed, and I think they have assist. Adam Gase is pretty good with quarterbacks. I mean, he's a guy that when he was in Chicago made Jay Cutler serviceable, so you know he knows what he's doing. And he's simplified things for Tannehill, and this stat I could not believe. In his last 11 starts, Tannehill is 10-1.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable because I think this guy, to me, like, I've always been hard on this guy. I think he's your classic sort of – I always call him the Miami mannequin because from afar – he looks like the prototypical franchise quarterback. And then you get up close and you're like, oh, that's not real. It's just a mannequin. And that's the thing with him. But he's playing at a really high level and he has great weapons. And if you can dump it off to one of these guys and they're going to take it 70 yards to the house or they're just going to be wide open off of some sort of, you know, jet sweep motion or some sort of motion that freezes the defense, that simplifies it for Tannehill. And he can make those plays and make those throws.
Yeah. So, again, it really feels like field position is going to be a big thing for the Patriots tomorrow. And, again, the Dolphins, you were just mentioning, they I'm looking at the average. Yeah, they start at the 35, almost 35.5-yard line. It's the best in the league on defense, 26.5, which is 11th place after 3 games. So that's going to be a big factor tomorrow. Going back to what I opened with, you know, you're the more tempered, well-spoken, better-looking of us two. When I say, and I obviously tend to be drastic, but when I say it's a must win, do you look at it the same way for the Patriots tomorrow?
No. I mean, look, should they win the game, obviously, I think that would quell a lot of fears around here. But I don't feel like if they lose the game and go to 1-3 that the season's over. And I know you'd be three games behind the Dolphins. I don't see the Dolphins going 12-4 this year. I don't. I know, I think it would be one of those things where the division's going to be 10-6, 11-5, something like that. So, you know, obviously everybody feels better if they win. It's better if they take a must-win mentality. But when you start saying must-win to me, that means, like, if you don't win, there's some sort of dire consequence, like the season's over, the dynasty's over, write them off, and I don't feel that way.
All right, so I want to go back to your column here, five ways to fix the struggling Patriots from the Boston Globe yesterday. You mentioned in the first segment using two tight ends.
You like the listicle?
I do. I always love a listicle.
We're big on the listicle now.
I love lists, Chris. I am a simple, simple man.
Okay.
So Jacob Hollister, getting him involved into the offense, I believe in that, so I'm with you on that. But in terms of the defense, look, you mentioned Trey Flowers, his importance, how impactful he can be to the defense. If he's back in the field, okay, yeah, like, look, I'm with you. I think he might be the most important player, him and Gilmore, but do you think that will help to free up a guy like Adrian Claiborne, which I saw this week, I felt like he hadn't done much, but one tackle through three games, and as good as he looked in the preseason, do you think that helps free him up if Flowers is out there tomorrow?
Yeah, I don't know. I think right now with Claiborne, you know, part of it is trying to adjust to the way the Patriots play defense. And he's played in schemes in Tampa and Atlanta where you, as a pass rusher, can just kind of tee off and get upfield. And with the Patriots, you have to stay in your rush lane. And he's had a hard time doing that. And that's the thing. You know, when people talk about guys who have been here and maybe they haven't put up as big pass rush numbers, a lot of it is because of the way the Patriots rush. It's not just get there by any means necessary. It's get there, but you have to stay in your rush lane. So he struggled with that. So I don't know if having Flowers back is going to help him with that. I mean, look. He looked good in the preseason, Jim, but I always had some concern about taking a guy who basically had six sacks in one game against a backup Cowboys tackle, and the Cowboys and stupid Jason Garrett were too stubborn to give the guy help when he was getting annihilated, you know, because Tyron Smith was injured. So I was always a little leery of that. I'm not saying the guy can't play, but the level of impact that he was going to make to me was not relative to a guy that had a nine-sack season when six of the sacks are in one game against a horrible Cowboys backup and the Cowboys just refuse to adjust, put somebody else in the game, or give the guy help.
Yeah, I never really believed in that game from last year. Oh, Claiborne had six sacks in one game. It's like, yeah, that's more about the idiocy of Jason Garrett,
yes,
like you point out. Another way to fix this team that's struggling right now, you write here, safety first.
Yeah.
One of the strengths of the Patriots defense, their trio of safeties, McCourty, Chung, Harmon. Obviously, Chung doesn't play last week.
Yep.
And I'm not the biggest Pat Chung guy in terms of his pass coverage, but when that game was, it felt like the Patriots making the comeback. It's 13-10. It's Lions ball. And in that touchdown that ends up going to Marvin Jones, where there's the miscommunication between Daron Harmon and Stephon Gilmore. Well, if you look at that All-22 tape, it was definitely a mistake by Harmon.
Yeah, and he admitted it.
If Chung's there, and you know what? Al Michaels even said it at the time in the broadcast, and I tend to believe it. If Chung's there, like, I don't think that you have that kind of a mistake, because if there's one thing Pat Chung is good at, he's a heady player. So it's unfortunate, because it's like, okay, here comes the comeback. The Lions are going to screw up and become the Lions again. And when that happened, that touchdown was given up. It's like, oh, my God, this is like the Eagles Super Bowl. Like, they can't get out of their own way. But having Pat Chung back tomorrow, which questionable with the concussion, you think that could help things too?
Yeah, and I just think in general, look, McCourty, Harmon, Chung, the Patriots have invested at that position. They have three starter caliber guys at that position. When they go nickel, a lot of times they'll go to that big nickel with the three safeties. Those guys have to be playmakers. And Devin said it this week. You know, they have to go out and make plays. He wasn't talking just about the safeties. He was talking about the entire defense. But I think it really applies to that safety group. Those are all guys the Patriots worked to retain. They paid them all. You know, I'm not saying Devin's one of the highest paid safeties. You know, Daron and Patrick Chung are not exorbitantly paid by any means, but the team has invested at that spot, and those guys have to be difference makers. So not only do they need to not bust coverages, but I go back to the Super Bowl. I thought in that game that one of the things people didn't really talk about, Jim, was those guys didn't play well. They didn't tackle well. And a big part of this defense is predicated on those guys playing well and making plays. And we haven't seen it for a little while, and they need to start doing it. And they know it. They know it.
You don't have it in your list here, but what about the play of Tom Brady? What have you made of him the last couple of weeks, especially last week? And as it turns out, we ended up posting this on the Filgren Mass Facebook page. He missed some throws. Even Zoe was talking about it on Beetle and Zolak and Bertrand the other day on Sports Hub. That the first few throws, and there was one to Hogan where he airmailed him in Jacksonville, too. Mm. He hasn't looked sharp. You know, look, as much of a Brady Bobo as I can be, and you as well, he does have to be better.
Yeah, he definitely has to be better. There's no question about it. He can be better. I think part of it is a trust factor, and I think he's gotten sped up a little bit because he's already thinking, like, no one's going to be open, no one's going to be open, no one's going to be open. And then even when guys are open, I think he's rushing it. He's thinking this guy's not going to be open for long. You know, and that's on him, but I think it also speaks to his awareness of what he's working with, and I think that's sort of one of the issues. And you can blame him for it. You can blame Belichick, I think, for giving him personnel that he doesn't fully trust as well and that hasn't really gotten open. Those throws, that's on Tom, no question about it. But you want to talk about Al Michaels. I go back to the second sack Eli Harold had, and Al Michaels is going, that's a coverage sack if I've ever seen one. Yeah. And then they show, like, there's nowhere to go. And I think that's Tom's expectation sort of every time he takes the snap is that it's going to be like that. And when it's not like that, he's sort of surprised. And, you know, that's a problem. So Brady certainly needs to play better. But let's be honest. I don't think Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are the issues with this offense. I know the Mike Lombardi had the comments about Gronk slowing down. Is Gronk as good as he was, you know, in 2012 or whatever? Probably not. Probably not. But let's not get carried. Like, let's not lose the forest among the trees. Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are not the issues with the offense. On the list of things wrong with the offense, those two guys are at the bottom. We have issues with wide receivers. There's issues with blocking up front in the running game. There's issues with a rookie running back being able to make guys miss. There's a lot of other things going on. There's issues with Dwayne Allen being on the team in passing situations. There's a lot of other things before we get to Gronkowski and Brady being the problem offensively.
Preach. Coming up, we're going to find out a little bit more about this Dolphins team and whether or not their 3-0 record is legit or a bit of a mirage. We're going to talk to Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. But first, it's the Sports Hub headlines with Mike Sarge-Riley. It's 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Double reverse action, and here comes Albert Wilson throwing it. Wide open, Jakeem Grant. Grant to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown.
Dolphins in their win over the Oakland Raiders last week. It is Gasper Murray from Splitsville at Patriot Place. It is 98.5 The Sports Hub. And joining us on our expert hotline to give us some insight into the Dolphins side of things as we head into tomorrow's game, it's Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. Good morning, Armando.
Expert hotline. I need to get off the expert hotline. I need to get on the schlub hotline.
No, that's so not true, Armando.
So, as I'm sure you remember, almost 10 years to the day since the Dolphins won a game here at Gillette Stadium, the famed Wildcat game. You got Ronnie Brown, 4 touchdowns, throws for the 5th, as gimmicky and trick-filled game plan as the NFL has ever seen, at least that I ever saw. And based on one of your columns this week, Armando, I get the feeling that you're thinking that Adam Gase and the Dolphins should actually follow suit. Why is that?
Well, because they've told me that they've got stuff cooking. So I'm not sure that they're going to come out with, like, you know, the wing T or anything like that. Obviously, you know, they believe that they're going to be able to run the ball on the New England Patriots, and that's, you know, job one. However, there has to be and there will be in the game plan and on Adam Gase's call sheet plays that could potentially change the course of the game, change the tenor of the game. We saw it last week against the Oakland Raiders. Look, that game was pretty much Dullsville, and the Dolphins were struggling to do anything until 7 minutes were left in the game. And then he calls this crazy, you know, receiver to receiver pass. I, you know, they won't tell us what they call it because they say that if you know what they call it, you can figure out, or at least the New England Patriots or someone else can figure out what comes next. And so they call that play. It's a touchdown pass that you just had from Albert Wilson to Jakeem Grant for 52 yards. And then the next series, they have a 74-yard run on a modified jet sweep. And so those plays, those kind of plays are the ones that they think that they could do more of, if not necessarily just in this game, but the rest of the season.
Armando, just reading your shirt, you brought up something interesting about the types of plays you just mentioned, that it seems like you're saying they might be masking, you know, execution issues on offense. What have you seen from this offense with Ryan Tannehill when you subtract the trick plays?
the same offense I've seen for years. So Ryan, this week, along with Gase, the head coach, took a lot of credit for the fact that they've been together 16 games, Chris. And in those 16 games, they're 11-5 together. And they're 10-1 in the last 11 of those. So it sounds like they're a machine. In fact, they're kind of a, you know, they're kind of a used car that you get off the lot and you hope in every morning when it's cold, it starts up and you're just happy that it starts up in the morning. Because again, before those, like those trick plays against Oakland, they were just puttering along. It wasn't impressive. They were averaging 3.5 yards a carry. They only got 45 offensive plays total. So it wasn't like they were extending drives. They weren't converting third downs. It was very mundane. And so mundane's not going to get you a whole lot of wins unless you have something extra.
Getting some insight into the Dolphins side of things as we head into tomorrow's game from Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So, Armando, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how you're talking about the team, I kind of get the feeling that you think this 3-0 record thus far is a bit of a mirage.
Well, it's not a mirage because obviously they did it, but they didn't exactly beat Minnesota or Los Angeles, the Rams, or, you know, Jacksonville. They haven't played any of those teams. This game for them is going to be a test of whether they are legit or kind of fraudulent. You know, the Miami Dolphins have started 3-0 before. And one of those victories was a whipping of the New England Patriots. I think it was 2013. And you know what happened after they started 3-0? They lost their next four. And so Dolphin fans have seen that. The media has seen that. Everyone has seen that. And there is no one that's, you know, punching tickets to Atlanta for the Super Bowl. Everyone's saying, okay, show us more. Let's see more. What do you got now? And even they would tell you, we're going to do this one week at a time. We're not pretending that we've got all the problems solved and we're, you know, going to just roll people. They're a work in progress.
Armando, how does this offensive line look to you? I know that's been an issue for the Dolphins the last couple of years. How have they played in this 3-0 start?
They were a lot better when Josh Sitton was healthy. Unfortunately for them, that only lasted two games. And so he was their best interior lineman. And he's out for the season with an ACL injury. And so now they're okay. They're not terrible. They're okay. But you know what, Chris? Interestingly, okay is kind of an upgrade. Because in the past, it's been, oh, my God, are you kidding me? There was the first 4 years that Ryan Tannehill played for the Miami Dolphins, he was the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. It's not like he was one of the most, the most. I think the number was 183 sacks or something like that off the top of my head. And obviously in 2016, he went out with an ACL injury on a hit from an Arizona Cardinals defensive lineman. So there were issues with the Dolphins offensive line. Much fewer issues this year. Also, they're throwing the ball quicker, so that kind of mitigates the damage that the offensive line can do.
All right, before we let you go, Armando, just tell us a little bit about the Dolphins' defense, how they've looked over the first 3 weeks, and how their top pick, Minkah Fitzpatrick's been playing.
I think Minkah is going to be a really good player. He's a versatile player. He's a really bright player. He's better, and he's shown that he's better as their slot, their nickel corner. That's what he did at Alabama last week. Because Rashad Jones was out, he had to play at safety, and it was new to him, and it showed. Rashad Jones is expected to play this week, and that's bad news for the Patriots because he's a Pro Bowler. He's pretty good. Otherwise, they're solid. They're good. They've been trying. Here's something interesting. They've been trying to roll guys in and out of the defensive line. And what that did was it created fewer plays for Cameron Wake and Robert Quinn, who were two, you know, pretty accomplished pass rushers. This week, they're banged up. They lost William Hayes to a knee injury. Andre Branch is not going to play because of a knee injury. So less of the shuttle system. That means more Cameron Wake and more Robert Quinn. That's not, you know, good news for the Dolphins, but definitely it's not good news for Tom Brady.
I just want to ask you quickly, Armando, because we're on the defense here. How do you feel about the linebackers? I know they're young. You have Jerome Baker, who I believe is a rookie, and then Raekwon McMillan. And we all know about Kiko Alonso, but that was sort of another problem area for the Dolphins over the last couple of years, linebacker play. Are they significantly better this year at that position?
No. And the reason they're not is not because they haven't tried. It's just now that they're dealing with inexperience. In the past, it's been a talent problem. In the past, they've had, you know, when he's not AWOL, Lawrence Timmons chasing people or not knowing where he was supposed to be. This year, it's, you know, Jerome Baker is a rookie. Raekwon McMillan is in the middle, and he's in his second year, but he missed his entire rookie year with an ACL injury. So two inexperienced guys, sometimes things are new to them. And that's been problematic. It was problematic against the Jets. It was problematic last week, especially in pass coverage against the Oakland Raiders. So they can be had. It's troublesome. When they finally get that experience, they definitely have the skills and the athleticism to make it work. Last week, Jordy Nelson catches what was like a 60-yard pass. The guy that ran him down from behind was Jerome Baker, the linebacker.
Yeah, he can fly.
So quick prediction before we let you go. Are they going to take a commanding 3-game lead in the AFC East, or is it going to be Groundhog Day all over again?
They're going to take the field at 1 o'clock. That's my prediction. I don't know what – look, I'm not falling for the banana in the tailpipe trick with the Miami Dolphins. You know, I think they're going to, you know, roll in there and be ready to play. But I'm not picking them to win against the New England Patriots at Gillette. I'm not crazy.
Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. Always great stuff from you, Armando. You got great weather for the weekend, too, so go out and enjoy it before the game.
It is gorgeous. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Armando.
Again, that's Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald.
He's the best.
Yeah,
I love Armando.
He's great.
He's good.
Okay, so next here on Gaspar Murray in our long commercial-free segment. Chris, I want to get your thoughts on a few things elsewhere in the NFL, like the roughing the passer penalties, which I feel like are out of control, the Jimmy Garoppolo injury. And then at noon, we tip off the first Sports Hub Celtics show of the season. That's here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Gaspar and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Penalties were called in a similar fashion on both sides, and from that perspective, it's fair. I don't worry a lot about how the game is being officiated, provided it's being officiated in a similar way, and I thought it was from that perspective, but as somebody that appreciates the game and understand that we're in the sport entertainment business, it is worrisome from the fan perspective. I do worry about what it's like to watch that game at home, you know, with penalties being administered at the rate that they were.
Gaspar Murray, 98.5 Sports, coming to you live from Splitsville, right outside Gillette Stadium here today. And as of Thursday night's Rams beatdown of the Vikings, Chris, we're at the quarter pole of the NFL season. Man, time flies. So I want your quick hits on some of the storylines outside of what's going on here with the New England Patriots. So starting with that rough of the passer penalty thing that's going on, we reached the peak of stupidity, in my opinion, in the Steelers win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday night. You just heard Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin complaining about those penalties there in the rejoin. Four in one game, most since 2001. The most egregious, I don't know if you watched the game, but Jason Pierre-Paul in the first half literally tapped Ben Roethlisberger on the head.
Yeah.
And that fat pervert goes down like a sack of potatoes in an Oscar-worthy performance, and they call roughing the passer. It can't get any worse than that. This week, the league comes out with a video showing what is and what isn't, but it doesn't feel like they're going to be changing anything like they seemingly did with the lowering the helmet rule.
Although they said they weren't going to change it with lowering the helmet, and then all of a sudden it stopped getting called. This is a league that does not like to admit it was wrong. They'll make a change and just be like, we didn't change anything. What are you talking about?
But what have you thought of these being called?
Absurd. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Even the video they sent out. You know, I looked at the video of what's legal and what's not, and I understand what they're saying, roll off the guy. The last one they showed, I can't tell who the Indianapolis Colts player is. It looks like Marcus Hunt to me. He literally rock bottoms Andy Dalton to the ground, and it's like, but that one's legal. He drove him into the turf with more force than the ones that they showed that were illegal because the guy's just landing on top of them. And then Armando referenced it. William Hayes of the Dolphins.
He hurt himself.
Tore his ACL trying to adjust midstream so that he didn't land on Derek Carr. I just think it's sort of sanctimonious. I think it's hypocritical. And I think the real message is that the safety of the quarterback is more important than the other players that are out there. I don't think this was necessary. If you look at the Anthony Barr play last year with Aaron Rodgers, he really did sort of drive him into the ground in a way that he didn't have to do it. And I go back to the old, you know, I can't remember who the player was, but I think it was, you know, Jim McMahon, like with the Bears, got like basically body slammed into
the ground. 30 seconds after the play, after he got hit.
Yeah, I know, you remember that play?
Yeah, it was Green Bay. They were playing.
It was Green Bay. I can't remember who the defender was.
You can find it on YouTube. It's
brutal. I know. He got suplexed. Stuff like that take out of the game. But if you're making a tackle against these guys, like, yeah, you're going to land on them. Like, isn't that a tackle? This rule is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like I don't think that the quarterback, like, if you got to go with the knees, you got to protect them that way. But this rule is stupid. It stems from the Anthony Barr hit that hurt Rodgers last year, and as well as they've done with the lowering the helmet thing, Chris, because I was freaked out about that, like a lot of, like, you know, old grumpy NFL fans. Ah, they're going to ruin the game. They're softening the game. Ah, yelling at a cloud. They did that right. They altered that. They altered the language of the rules so that you really haven't seen it. I haven't yet to really even see it called through the first 3 weeks. This thing's out of control. That on Monday night was awful.
But if you read the rule book and you read the rule, and this is not a new rule, it's a point of emphasis in terms of, you know, landing on the guy with all or most of your body weight. If you read the rule, part of the rule, it says unnecessarily. And I feel like, again, this is an Alberto Riveron thing, and I don't mean to criticize this guy because I think, you know, he's certainly qualified for the job. But I don't think that he's giving the referees the proper guidance, in my opinion. Because unnecessarily means, you know, basically, like, you're intentionally trying to put all your body weight on the quarterback to hurt him. And I think that's different between – there's a difference between that and wrapping a guy up and going down and landing on him. Unnecessarily, I think, is the part of this – the language of this rule that they've lost.
Your thoughts on the Jimmy Garoppolo injury?
Yeah, it's a shame. I feel really bad for Jimmy, but, it wasn't the smartest play. He didn't know how it was going to end up, but I think this feeds into the narrative about Jimmy Garoppolo, which is tremendously talented but very small sample size. And the thing here with the Patriots was dependability is more important than ability. And I think for Garoppolo, you have to question his durability. Is this somebody who can stay on the field? It's a fluke situation. But so was the Kiko Alonso thing, and in both cases, he put himself in harm's way when maybe he didn't have to.
He's at fault. And did I chuckle initially? Yes, because I thought it was the shoulder, and I thought it was a dumb, hard-o play. Like, dude, get out of bounds. And that was on fourth down? Correct me if I'm wrong, too, I believe it was.
I thought it was third.
Third and a million.
It would have been fourth.
Yeah, but, dude, get out of bounds. But that it's a non-contact knee injury, that sucks. And I'll tell you, with the way that the Rams have looked and how the rest of that division looks, and now that Garoppolo's out, like, that, for all intents and purposes, I think is going to be wrapped up within the next, like, 4 weeks because there's not a lot of competition on that NFC West. So it does suck for the league. Speaking of that, has any team risen above the rest, in your opinion? Granted, small sample size, 3 weeks, but we're at the quarter pole as of Thursday night with the Rams' win over the Vikings. Has any team shown you they're the most legit in either conference thus far?
You have to say the Rams. I mean, just the way that they've played offensively, it's so impressive. And then I know they lost Aqib Talib. He's on IR. But if your corners are, when you get to the playoffs, Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, and you're rushing the passer with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald, you're pretty good. So the Rams, to me, have been the most impressive team. And in Kansas City, I still have some questions about that defense,
that
secondary.
Doesn't look that good.
I know. I still have some questions there. Linebackers, I think, are not the greatest. But the way Mahomes has played, you know offensively that they can put the point. I mean, you have Mahomes, you have Kareem Hunt, you have Tyreek Hill, you have Travis Kelce. They're loaded. They have a ton of weapons.
Well, and Sammy Watkins, too, who looks like he's a little bit revived in that offense. And Conley is the kid out of Georgia, the wide receiver. Who am I thinking of? Is that who it is?
Yeah, there is a Conley. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't think that guy's that good, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah, no, I mean, they look like world beaters on offense. That secondary, to me, though, is still a question mark.
Do you watch 90 Day Fiancé? I know you watch a lot of trash television.
I do. I have not seen that one. Why?
Well, because Pat Mahomes, I've been tweeting this. I'm particularly proud of myself. There's one, the most annoying character on that show, Chantel. She's from Atlanta. She's in, I mean, they're all in horrible relationships. But her brother, who got in a fight with her fiancé, it looks just like Pat Mahomes, so I've been tweeting a photo of him with the touchdown count week to week. Just
like
real
it.
Quick, before we get to the Sports Hub Celtics show, one more thing. Seemingly, Ryan Fitzpatrick came back down to earth. Well, he turned right back into Ryan Fitzpatrick is what happened in that Monday night loss to Pittsburgh. Still threw for over 400 yards. Fitzpatrick or Winston going forward for the Bucks?
I think you have to go with Fitzpatrick. I mean, he did throw for 400 yards. He almost brought him back in that game. They have something going on. They're getting the most out of DeSean Jackson, which Winston couldn't do. They have a lot of weapons there offensively. You have to ride the hot hand, I think, if you're the Bucks.
Sports Hub Celtics show, first one of the year. We tip that off next. We'll be talking about Kyrie Irving, whether or not it sounds like he's now invested in the Celtics going forward. It feels like there's been a kind of a change of heart, at least the way the change he's been talking, as they've also tipped off their first preseason game of the year last night at the University of North Carolina against the Charlotte Hornets. We'll get into all of that Celtics talk.